Chapter 6. Corporal Dwayne Hicks of the Colonial Marines sat on the edge of his hospital bed. He'd had damned little to do since coming out of cold sleep, and there was no sign of that changing anytime soon. Maybe boredom therapy was the latest trend in medicine. Today, however, he'd decided to defy the rules by smoking a cigarette. Just for kicks. What the hell? It was his last one anyway. It wasn't a premeditated offense. Smoking had been the farthest thing from his mind when the medic had come in earlier, too cheerful for the time of day, as usual. He'd removed the old dressing, checked his dermis with a hand scanner before reapplying the topical medication with fresh dressing. "You've got great skin, Corporal Hicks," he'd chirped. "The scar tissue's fading already. Your vitals are good, too. Even your renals. Problems with kidney function are pretty common after prolonged cold sleep, but you're peeing like a champ. Keep up the good work, and I'll be back in a couple of hours." That had been 3 hours ago. Well, at least the painkillers were working. They were good ones, too. Worked on the pain while leaving his head clear, something he felt was far more important than erasing scar tissue. At present, he was halfway through a 5-year re-up that he had very nearly passed on. Time in cold sleep wasn't included until a person left the military. Hicks was a veteran of 11 official combat missions, 6 peacekeeping actions that had turned out to be bug hunts, and 4 humanitarian rescue operations. The most recent of those had turned into a bug hunt and foobarred him into a brief stint as CO before the rest of his squad were wiped out by hostile alien creatures. Xenomorphs, they called them. The xenomorphs had left him responsible for the evacuation of 2 severely traumatized civilians, one of them a child, and the synthetic assigned as technical support to his squad, all of whom had had to fend for themselves when he'd been incapacitated by acid burns. Fubar, however, had continued just fine without him. Before she'd put them all in cold sleep, Ripley had awakened him just long enough to brief him on how an alien queen had boarded the Sulaco, dismembered Bishop, and very nearly slaughtered her and the girl before she had blown the thing out the airlock. Things certainly were a lot quieter around here, but Hicks knew better than to assume it was all over. At best, this was intermission. There was never just one of anything. And even if there were, it wouldn't be Fubar. Every Fubar was a disaster unique unto itself, but most, if not all, started the same way. Someone in authority gave orders and expected the entire universe to obey them. Well, fuck that shit. As of now, Hicks decided he was done with authority. All authority of any kind, any place, any time, in general or in particular. He was going outlaw. Hasta la pasta, baby. All the same, he was still weak from extended time in cold sleep, as well as his injuries. If someone came in to make him stop smoking, he wasn't up to much more than harsh language. His gaze fell on the pillow at the slightly elevated head of his hospital bed, and he smiled to himself. Next week, he was going to rip the tags off those suckers with his bare hands. And if he couldn't, then he'd take off and nuke them from orbit. It was the only way to be sure. He blew a stream of smoke at the ceiling light and waited. Nothing happened. Not even a scolding over the PA system. Jesus, had everyone in surveillance fallen asleep? Hudson appeared in his mind's eye, goofy and smug. "That all you got, Corporal Badass?" Hicks stubbed out his cigarette on the metal bed frame and dropped it on the floor. Still nothing. Not even crickets. Either it was shift change and nobody was paying attention, or the whole goddamn universe was broken. Correction. More. Broken. He looked over at the open doorway, and it occurred to him that he hadn't seen anyone even just walk past in the hall for quite some time. According to his watch, it was now 3.5 hours since the medic's visit, and longer than that since he'd seen anyone else. Fuck this. If someone didn't tell him about Newt, Ripley, and Bishop by dinner time, he'd go full-on outlaw and find out for himself. You know there's no smoking in here. Right? The woman in the doorway looked from him to the cigarette butt on the floor and back again in obvious disapproval, although she didn't look anything like an authority, not even a hall monitor. It was probably her biohazard suit. "Won't happen again, ma'am." He covered his disappointment by sweeping the butt under the bed with one slippered foot. That seemed to throw her off balance. The good boys and girls always got a little flustered by a polite outlaw. Or maybe it was the first time anyone had ever called her ma'am. "I'm Spence," she said. "I'm not a medic. I'm from the tissue culture lab. I have to get a sample." Pause. "Of tissue." Shorter pause. "From you." He was tempted to thank her for making that clear in case he was too tobacco-addled to understand. "How?" She took a case out of her lab coat, removed a metal cylinder from it, and held it out to him. "Stick your thumb in there, please," she added. Outlaws had to pick their battles, Hicks thought, doing as she asked. Something nipped him, and he automatically jerked back. There was a tiny pink mark in the fleshiest part of his thumb. "Sorry." Her expression was a bit sheepish. "It's better if you don't expect it."
"Better for who?"
he asked, darkly. "Both of us." She returned the cylinder to her pocket. "You're the last one." That sounded vaguely ominous, Hicks thought. She turned to leave, and he grabbed her wrist.
"Hold it right there, Spence," he growled. "What about the others, Ripley and Newt? Did they come through okay?"
The woman looked warily at his hand around her wrist. "Who's Newt?"
"The kid, the little girl," he added.
"Oh, you mean Rebecca?" She tried to pull away, but Outlaw Hicks's heart of gold was in the laundry. "Rebecca's fine, really. She's just fine."
"What about Ripley?" he asked.
The woman hesitated, which made him tighten his grip a little more. Her wary expression intensified. He was really starting to scare her now. His conscience jabbed at him for mistreating someone weaker than himself, but he told himself to feel guilty later. This woman could have been anything from a shady synthetic spy to an undercover stormtrooper gauging his physical condition for a round of torture. Oh, sure, lots of stormtroopers worked undercover taking tissue samples. Nonetheless, he was still responsible for Newt and Ripley, and as of right now, he didn't even know where they were.
"And what about Bishop?" he demanded, giving her wrist a little shake. "Where's Bishop?"
The woman blinked at him, so surprised that she seemingly forgot she was scared. "What kind? Episcopal, Orthodox, Catholic, or Roman Reformed?" That was almost funny.
"The artificial person assigned to my squad, his name was Bishop."
"The Sulaco arrived with only you three aboard," she said, speaking slowly and carefully, like a shrink trying to persuade a suicide bomber to put down the detonator. "That's what they said, anyway. They don't usually tell me that much." She took a breath. "Listen, maybe you just need a little more rest. You want me to call someone? I can get someone in here. They'll give you something." Hicks pulled her closer and spoke directly into her face.
"Why haven't I been debriefed yet?" he demanded. "What's going on? Did something happen to Newt and Ripley?"
She tried to twist free and he tightened his grip even more, knowing he was hurting her and hating himself for stooping to cruelty, but he couldn't let her go without getting a straight answer.
"I don't know," she said through gritted teeth. "I told you, I'm from the tissue lab. I'm just a tech. Nobody tells techs anything. If my chronograph broke, they wouldn't even tell me the time. All I know, besides what I just told you, is everybody's been sleeping short hours ever since you got here." Before he could respond to that, there was a loud crash of metal and glass in the corridor, followed by a cry of pain. Hicks let go of the woman, who immediately moved out of his reach, rubbing her wrist and glaring at him. He paid no attention as Newt raced in, wearing a bright green hospital gown and fuzzy socks to match. The girl slid across the polished floor like it was ice, looked around wildly, realized there was no way out, and backed into the nearest corner, pale and wild-eyed. She'd looked the same way the first time Hicks had ever seen her on LV-426. Somehow, she'd survived on her own for weeks before his squad had arrived on their would-be rescue mission. Some rescue. Without Newt, he and Ripley never could have survived. God damn it! The orderly in the doorway was wearing the same biohazard gear as the tissue lab tech, except one glove was torn. She bit me! He huffed and started toward her. Instantly, Hicks was off the bed and standing directly in front of the orderly in a combat stance. The man backed away, holding both hands up. Not an interrogator in sheep's clothing, then, Hicks thought, just clueless about kids, probably because he'd never been one himself. Where's Ripley? Newt demanded from behind him. She sounded a little less wild, but not yet inclined to behave. Hicks didn't blame her. Where is she? I want her! I want Ripley! Right now! Where is she? She shouted.
She asked you a question, Hicks told the orderly, in case he was too addled by Newt's bite to understand.
The other man straightened up like he thought he was an authority. Are you looking to get yourself sedated, soldier?
Clueless about kids and too stupid to live, Hicks thought unhappily. Maybe he should bite the guy, too.
Where is she?
Newt said again, shouting even louder. And now I'm asking you, Hicks added, dangerously quiet. Abruptly, the lab tech stepped forward, pulling down her mask.
Hey, Rebecca? She glanced at Hicks. Newt? Honey? Ripley's okay, I promise. She's resting, so she can get better.
She inched toward the girl, glancing at Hicks to see if it was okay with him. He gave a barely perceptible nod.
Ripley's going to be just fine, she continued. We're taking real good care of her, honest.
Newt's breathing began to calm. The kid had better instincts for danger than anyone Hicks had ever met. If she thought this woman was okay, then she was. But that didn't mean he could relax.
I know where Ripley is, the woman said, holding out her hand as she took another step toward Newt. I can take you to see her. That's what you want, right? To see for yourself that she's all right?
Hey, Spence, what the hell? The orderly had the sour tone of a habitual complainer.
You know there's no way.
He took a step toward her and Hicks blocked him again, pointing at a far corner. The orderly went without protest. Newt eyed the tech's outstretched hand, then tucked both of her own under her armpits. The woman didn't push, only moved toward the door. Newt made sure that Hicks was coming, too, before she followed. As they rode up the elevator with Spence, Hicks began to wonder if he was doing the right thing. He hadn't been able to find out exactly what had happened when the Sulaco had arrived at Anchor Point, and all he knew about Ripley was what the lab tech had told Newt. She's fine, just fine. He wanted to believe that Ripley was unharmed simply because Newt was all right. Sleep capsules were remarkably sturdy, fire-resistant, waterproof, and airtight, and could even provide extra protection from radiation. But nothing could stand up to the alien's acid blood. When they got to the right floor, Spence gave Newt the room number and the girl ran ahead before Hicks could tell her to wait. He braced himself for hysterics, but there were no screams, no tears. And it finally came to him that Spence would never expose the kid to anything really bad. Feeling a little foolish, he followed her in and was relieved to see that Ripley hadn't been injured during the boarding party fiasco. At the same time, however, she was not just fine. Not with all that high-tech equipment surrounding her. Even the bed was high-tech. Ripley was practically in a cocoon of hardware. No, not cocoon. That wasn't a good word. Nest was better. Ripley was in a nest of hardware, looking like she was peacefully asleep, but in no way just fine. The hardware wasn't a problem for Newt. She didn't even blink at the line of wireless electrodes across Ripley's forehead. There were two more electrodes at her temples and others hidden in her thick, dark hair.
See? Spence said. She's resting. Sleeping.
Then she looked at Hicks as if to make sure he was okay with that. He made an awkward movement that was part nod and part shrug.
Hicks thought Ripley's condition was probably closer to coma than sleep, but Newt didn't need to know that. Or maybe she did know. The kid was pretty sharp. At the moment, she was looking from Ripley's serene face to the overhead monitor and back again. It seemed to be a highly elaborate EEG, more complex than anything Hicks had ever seen. Not that he had seen a whole lot of them, but Newt seemed to be familiar with it. The memory of the biolab at LV-426 came back to him. At the time, he'd thought it was awfully elaborate for a colony of first-wave shake-and-bakers, but circumstances hadn't allowed further consideration. Otherwise, it might have occurred to him how strange it was for terraformers to be doing in-depth research on the alien specimens instead of shipping them off to a company facility specializing in xenobiology.
"That's a good thing, that she's asleep," Spence was saying. "Sometimes people need a lot of sleep to get over things."
Newt studied Ripley's face for a few moments, then checked the EEG again.
"Is she dreaming?" "Well,"
the tech looked at Hicks nervously.
"I don't know, honey. Are her eyes moving?" "Ripley said it was okay to dream."
Newt's voice was heavy with sadness.
"It's always better not to. Always."